Somewhere in the high desert of central Oregon, there is a cave lined with crystals that's big enough to walk into. Does it really exist? Some people think it doesn't actually exist at all, that it's just a fairy tale. Other people tell me they've been there. Where is it? They ain't telling me, because I think they know that if they told me, I'd tell you. But let me tell you what I do know about this. My name's Finn J.D. John. And today I'm reading you something from the archives of the weekly newspaper column I write, Offbeat Oregon History. If you'd like some more information about this little podcast or about Offbeat Oregon History, stay tuned, or you can check out the online archives at offbeatoregon.com. But this column first ran in the newspapers on March 28th, 2010, under the headline, Central Oregon's Legendary Crystal Cave. Is it real? Here we go. Somewhere in the high desert of south central Oregon, there may or may not be a massive cave lined with big quartz crystals worth millions of dollars. People have been hunting for it for more than 100 years now, but they may have been looking in the wrong place. They may have been just chasing a will-o'-the-wisp. The story of the Crystal Cave is one of those tales that can safely be called a legend. The fact is, after passing through the hands of a half-dozen authors, several of whom seem to have added little touches, such as made-up dialogue, to increase its appeal, it's just hard to know exactly what part of it is real. Here's the basic story. Sometime between 1896 and 1904, a group of cowboys stopped to camp for the night somewhere between Burns and the Pine and stumbled onto the entrance of a cave. After collecting a few samples of the crystals that were growing out of the walls and floor and ceiling and everything, they continued to bend, where they started telling people about what they'd found. This is where the stories diverge. One version, given a boost in a 1946 article by Phil Brogan in the Portland Oregonian, says the cowboy's story came to the attention of a shopkeeper named Nick Smith, who went out to follow the trail of the cattle drive. In this version of the story, the cowboys were on a cattle drive. Smith found a cave, Brogan reported, but was forced to head for home when the weather turned ugly. He went back the following spring, but over the winter the landscape had changed enough to foil his effort, and he spent the following 20 years trying to get back to the cave. This account does raise some questions. First off, why would a man on a horse, a day's ride from the nearest town, leave the shelter of a cave when a snowstorm was threatening? And secondly, how likely is it that he and all these cowboys would, every single one of them, be unable to even identify the approximate location, accurate to a square mile or so? The weather might change the landscape over a harsh winter, but trees, mountains, and rocky outcroppings, they don't generally move around. The other account is also problematic. It's from the son-in-law of Newt Cobb, one of the cowboys who found the cave. Cobb said he and his colleagues were shearing sheep, not driving cattle, and were traveling between Milliken and what's now Sun River. This story doesn't mention Smith, who presumably became interested in the story later. The problem with this account is geological. The terrain between Milliken and Sun River is simply not old enough to have grown crystals like the sample bits the cowboys brought back from the cave. So, either the samples are fakes or the story is inaccurate, in its geology if nothing else. The mystery may eventually solve itself, though. As historian Melanie Tupper points out, when the weather changes, cave entrances often give off visible plumes of condensation. So it's not unlikely that someone will see such a plume and follow it back to the entrance and find the cave. Of course, it's also not impossible that the entrance has somehow been closed off by an earthquake or a eroding rock, and will never be found. In the end, what we're left with is another delicious Oregon mystery, like the Lost Blue Bucket Mine, or the location of Sir Francis Drake's Nova Albion. Someday maybe we'll swap that mystery for a chance to see the real Crystal Cave after somebody finally finds it. But you have to wonder, would that really be a good trade? By the way, there's an excellent analysis of the conflicting Crystal Cave stories in Tupper's book, which in any case should be required reading for anyone interested in South Central Oregon history. It's called High Desert Roses, Volume 1. She's got a Volume 2 out now, too. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I plan to. And frankly, I think you probably should, too, if you're interested in stuff like this. I've got an afterword for you. After this article was published in the Redmond Spokesman, I got a phone call from a gentleman from Pendleton who sounded about 40 years older than me. He quizzed me pretty closely about what I knew about the Crystal Cave and where I thought it was. Then, with a little chuckle, he told me the cave was nowhere near the places this article talks about. In fact, he said, it was not south of Bend, but northeast, about 150 miles out of town. By the way, if you're not from here, you probably think I just gave away the location. If you are from here, you know I didn't. Speaking of giving away the location, I could tell by this time that if I asked him where it was, his answer would be a good-natured chuckle and probably nothing more, but I tried it anyway, of course, because, hey, I'm an old newspaper reporter, that's what I do. He told me quite clearly that he was not going to spill the beans, but this gentleman said he's actually been there, and he did not sound like the kind of fellow who's got nothing better to do than make long-distance phone calls to guys like me to lie about stuff like that, so I believe him. So, well, if you're thinking it might be a myth, I don't think so. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, there are hundreds of columns going back to 2008 on our webpage, offbeatoregon.com. On the website, you can also subscribe to receive these podcasts and have them delivered directly to your smartphone via RSS or iTunes. If you're interested in history geekery, be sure to check out the Facebook and Twitter feeds as well. All my stuff is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license, which means if you want to broadcast anything on your radio show, reprint anything in your blog or book project, or use any Offbeat Oregon anything in any way, commercial or not, go for it. Some restrictions apply. Google Creative Commons 3.0 for details. If you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of something at the Beanery, drop me a line. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.